1-0 scheme. 5 fruit or vegetable servings every day, 2 hours or less of screen time, 1 hour or more of physical activity, and 0 sugary drinks. And that's a great start on a healthy lifestyle.
And we should note that the obesity epidemic among teens is not unique. It's basically dovetailing what is happening with adults.
Yeah, sadly, a lot of the population is being affected, and it's not just the U.S. It's a really worldwide epidemic at this point.
So do you have a takeaway message from all this?
I think the important point of the study is really this type of testing, which is recommended, really needs to be done. And what we offer with our study is just another potential place where it can be done. So for parents, if their doctors, nurse practitioners, or whoever their primary care provider isn't doing the test, then this might be a viable alternative.
What are the main reasons that the tests are not being done?
Some of it has to do with payment, believe it or not. Some of it has to do with convenience. So not all offices are set up to do it, so kids have to be referred to more standard laboratories, either freestanding or hospital-based laboratories. The parents have to get the kids over to get them tested. So there's just a whole host of barriers, but what we're seeing nationwide is around 25 to 30% of kids at most are getting tested for this right now.
Dr. Robert Siegel, director of the Center for Better Health and Nutrition, part of the Heart Institute at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That's it for another edition of InfoTrack, a weekly production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. InfoTrack Internet services are provided by Pear.com. Thanks to this week's contributor, Roy Mackey. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
For many college graduates, transitioning to a rewarding career can be a challenge. Are colleges really preparing students for success in the professional world? We'll hear from a top educator.
People are going to come out of school, and the world is changing so quickly that really what we need to do is teach people how to learn, how to really respond to an ever-changing environment.
Then, nationwide food poisoning infections have increased as diagnostic tools have improved. An expert has helpful advice to avoid becoming the next victim.
Salmonella and Campylobacter are the two biggies. There are over 1 million consumers who get sick from Salmonella each year, and over 1 million get sick from Campylobacter each year.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. Stay tuned. InfoTrack begins right after this.
When you switch to Progressive and bundle your home and auto, you could save hundreds, and that's a surprising amount of money.
Whoa, that's like farmer's market money.
That's like, give me a gallon of that locally sourced raw honey money.
That's certified organic heirloom tomatoes in every imaginable color except red money.
That's, let's get 2 pounds of pink oyster mushrooms money. I'm not even sure I like pink oyster mushrooms.
Guess it's time to find out, because you could save hundreds when you switch to Progressive and bundle. Then the world is your pink oyster mushroom. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Not available in all states.
As of 9 a.m. this morning, our EV trucking company is officially in operation.
Andrew's zero-emission trucks are driving the transportation category forward.
We'll make driving safer, easier, and less stressful.
Now our technology needs to keep up with demand.
He needs to put pedal to the metal on hiring more software engineers.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. When you sponsor a job on Indeed, it's easier for talented candidates to find it, which makes it easier for you to hire them. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Workdays can be unpredictable, but your workwear shouldn't be. With a Cintas Apparel Plus program, you'll have freshly laundered garments for everyone on your team delivered every week. Cintas has workwear for just about any job imaginable, with high-performance fabrics and an uncompromising fit that stretches and moves with you. Don't leave looking and feeling good to chance. Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
This is the story of the one. He's responsible for keeping a leading healthcare facility clean and safe. And he trusts Grainger's high-quality HVAC cleaning and safety products, combined with their world-class supply chain, to consistently deliver, ensuring he's covered inside and out. so he can focus on keeping his facility clean to help protect the health of everyone inside. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Are colleges and universities really preparing young people for success in the professional world? If not, what skills and thought processes should be added to the curriculum? With the story, here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Tina Seelig is the author of the classic book, What I Wish I Knew When I Was 20, a crash course on making your place in the world. She's also the faculty director of Stanford Technology Ventures Program, which is the entrepreneurship center within the School of Engineering at Stanford University. So, Professor Seelig, for those who aren't familiar with your book, it offers some wise advice for young people who are making a transition from school into a career. And I think the opening story in your book is a really inspiring one, so tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty provocative story, and I didn't know how it was going to turn out until I gave the assignment. Essentially, I wanted to create an experience for my students to see what it was like to be entrepreneurial. And I gave them envelopes. Each envelope had $5 in it, that's all. And the students had as much time as they wanted to brainstorm over a couple of days. But as soon as they opened the envelope, they had 2 hours to figure out how to make as much money as possible, starting with the $5. And the thing that is so wonderful about this story is that, you know, I knew there were simple things they could do, like a lemonade stand and a car wash. But the teams that really blew my socks off were those who realized that the $5 was actually a limitation. And they realized that their 2 hours of time were much more valuable and ended up doing some truly innovative and provocative things.
And what was your favorite of those provocative things?
Well, there were so many of them. And most of them were situations where they found that there was an opportunity sitting right in front of them. I guess one example would be the team had set up a bike tire pump station in the middle of campus. They realized that everyone was driving around with bicycles that needed to get pumped up. And so they first started charging students $1 to get air put in their tires. But halfway through the 2 hours, they decided to experiment and said, you know what, we'll do this for free and ask for donations. And guess what? People gave them a lot more. So at the end of 2 hours, they had more than $200 just from setting up a stand in the middle of campus. And they walked away realizing that opportunities are everywhere. All you have to do is pay attention and put a little bit of effort, and you end up being able to really seize those opportunities.
Most of us would like to forget about our failures and just move on, but you have a different take on that.
You bet. I feel really strongly about mining your failures for insight. I have my students write failure resumes. That is all their biggest screw-ups, personal, professional, and academic. And in fact, it's funny because I gave an early version of the book to one of my students to read, and she said, wow, this is really interesting. I'd love to see one of these. So I thought, well, gee, whose do I put in? Do I do my husband's? And I realized I've got to put my own. So I created my own failure resume and put it in the book. And I honestly keep this up to date in my own life. I don't always write everything down, but whenever I make a mistake, I think, okay, what did I learn from this? And not only does it allow me to essentially put the mistake behind me, but I really move forward knowing I'll do things differently.
I think one of the most useful lessons in your book for not only 20-year-olds, but obviously for anyone, is going beyond what is expected. Tell us why that is so powerful.
Oh, gosh. You know, we're in school and in work situations where often we're given very specific guidelines about what we're supposed to do. And I've realized that people are waiting for permission to be amazing. One of my favorite lessons for my students is that they should never miss an opportunity to be fabulous. You know, if you're not going to do your best job now, when are you going to do it? And I tell them that I'm happy to give everyone an A in the class, but the bar is really high. And what happens is that people just continue to deliver more and more and more. I think we're all waiting, really waiting for permission to do our very best work and to really shine. And it's something that I really take to heart and also really find that people are so motivated when they're given an open-ended problem without one right answer to really, really push the limits of their own ability.
Our guest on InfoTrack is Tina Seelig, the author of the classic book, What I Wish I Knew When I Was 20. And we're getting some wise advice from Tina on what young people need to know when they leave college and enter the workplace. There are many people in the world who look at successful people and they say, well, it was mostly luck. Talk for a moment about that concept of luck.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by luck. In fact, I did a TED Talk recently that's gotten quite a bit of attention about how to be lucky. And the thing I realized is that luck is something that you make for yourself. And there are lots of ways to become luckier. One of the things I feel very strongly about is that lucky people take tiny risks every single day. They might be social risks, emotional risks, physical risks, financial risks. And these little risks, the results start adding up. Because if you're successful by taking that risk, you put a little bit more down and a little bit more down, a little more down. And pretty soon you've accomplished much more than someone who sat by themselves not doing anything. I have so many examples in my own life. And if you look at the lives of people who've been successful, you'll see they took risks. And I'm not talking about big risks like jumping off a bridge or investing $1 million. They're small risks, like introducing yourself to someone new or looking at a problem, you know, in a slightly different way. And it really does result in you becoming much more lucky in the long run.
What are your thoughts on how well our nation's higher education system is preparing young people to succeed once they enter the real world?
Wow, that's a really, really hard question. Essentially, I think the biggest problem is, and we all know this, is that people are going to come out of school and the world is changing so quickly that really what we need to do is teach people how to learn. We need to teach people how to really respond to an ever-changing environment. And so instead of giving problems with one right answer, you know, multiple choice tests, which are easy to grade, of course, but they're not easy in terms of preparing people for the lives they really need to live in the future. I love being able to give students very broad, open-ended problems. In fact, it's funny because most of the problems I give my students, you might laugh, are one-word prompts. They're words like memory or time or money or sleep. And I give them essentially a general direction to go. They have to spend time framing the problem they want to solve in this domain and then brainstorming to come up with hundreds of solutions. As opposed to giving them a very specific assignment, I think the thing that prepares people for a life outside of school is giving people really open-ended challenges that allow them to define the problem.
Interesting. So what has changed over the past 10 years that caused you to update this book?
I wrote the first book. It was actually a letter to my son on his 20th birthday. It came out when he turned 20. And over the last 10 years, I've had many, many opportunities to really expand on the concepts, and I've taught many more courses. I've worked with many more companies, and I've realized that some of the examples in the book were dated, so I was able to update the examples with much fresher situations that people who are now 20 years old would be able to relate to. And there are a couple new chapters in the book that really expand my thinking, especially chapters about luck. I've spent a lot of time thinking about that and understanding what it is that allows people to really seize opportunities around them.
Tina Seelig, the author of What I Wish I Knew When I Was 20, a crash course on making your place in the world. Tina, do you have a website?
People can go directly to my own website, which is tinaseelig.com. That's T-I-N-A-S-E-E-L-I-G. People can follow me on Twitter at tseelig. And also at Stanford, we have a really amazing collection of resources. It's at ecorner.stanford.edu. And there are thousands of videos and podcasts of entrepreneurial thought leaders that are really inspiring.
Well, thank you again for joining us on InfoTrack.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
Next, how to avoid becoming a victim of food poisoning. That story coming up.
Don't go away. InfoTrack will be back right after this.
Oh, by the way, Ivan's no longer on the project. His wife got a new job, so they're moving across the country.
Robin's top researcher is deviating to a new market. This isn't standard.
And now we're short-staffed. Who's going to finish all these projects?
She needs a cluster of new data analysts, and there's no margin for error.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Put our matching platform to work so you can spend less time searching and more time connecting with talented candidates. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Spring forward with real unlimited data from Straight Talk this tax season and get a free Samsung Galaxy A16 5G or Moto G Power 5G 2024 with select plans. So you can stream games during Mad March hours, check the weather for April showers, and watch gardening videos about May flowers. Straight Talk, real unlimited data. Available at Walmart and straighttalk.com. Offer valid through 4/15/25. Taxes and fees apply. Requires purchase of single line Gold Unlimited plan or higher. For network management practices, visit straighttalk.com.
My son loves to fly kites, but my active psoriatic arthritis can sometimes hold me back. Now with Skyrizi to treat my skin and joints, I'm ready to go. Skyrizi, risankizumab riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults, helps with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue. For those who also have plaque psoriasis, 90% clearer skin is possible with just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
With Skyrizi, there's nothing like clearer skin and better movement, and that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi today and visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
You're listening to InfoTrack. To learn more about our guests or listen to past shows, visit InfoTrack online at InfoTrackRadio.com. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
If it seems like the number of food poisoning infections you hear about in the news has increased, it may be the result of some new diagnostic tools that are finding more cases. Here to discuss this is Tony Corbo, senior lobbyist for the food campaign at Food and Water Watch, an advocacy group supporting stricter food safety regulations. Tony, these food poisonings do seem to be happening a lot. Are they primarily happening with fruits and veggies, or are meat and poultry more of a problem, or is it everything?
Produce is definitely on the uptick. There have been more foodborne illness outbreaks associated with produce, but meat and poultry outbreaks have remained fairly consistent over the last few years. So it's a problem. Food contamination is a big problem that needs to be addressed.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that this rise in poisoning cases, as I mentioned earlier, may be due to new diagnostic tools, but don't these cases first appear when a consumer gets sick from eating something?
Yeah, where you wind up getting the reporting is a consumer gets sick, goes to the doctor, and if the doctor asks the right questions to try to diagnose where the illness came from, if the doctor asks the question about food, then the doctor needs to take a stool sample to be analyzed to see if it, in fact, was food-related. And then that finding gets reported to the local health department or the state health department and goes into a database that CDC monitors to see if there's a pattern of the same food involved in foodborne illnesses across the country.
What are some of the most common types of food poisoning infections?
Well, the CDC is reporting, and I've been listening to the CDC's annual report now for over a dozen years, and it seems to be Salmonella and Campylobacter. These are two pathogens that are found primarily in poultry and meat. But because some of the runoff from large-scale poultry facilities or meat facilities can contaminate vegetables, you're starting to see more foodborne illnesses associated with Salmonella showing up in produce. But Salmonella and Campylobacter are the two biggies. According to the CDC, there are over 1 million consumers who get sick from Salmonella each year, and over 1 million get sick from Campylobacter each year.
Wow. Are these poisoning cases you just mentioned with poultry primarily, are these due to consumer errors in handling, or is the food coming out of the processing with these problems?
It's probably a combination of a number of factors. First, you really don't have any on-farm controls for food safety. There seems to be a regulatory hole where there's no agency really monitoring the level of Salmonella, for example, in the chicken flocks before those flocks are sent to the slaughter facility. the slaughter facilities, if they're not following proper sanitation, you can get cross-contamination within the slaughter facility. And then in the kitchen, if the consumer is not being careful in terms of handling poultry, for example, where they're using, let's say, the same cutting board to cut the chicken and then trying to make a salad using the same cutting board to chop up salad or tomatoes, you could start spreading that contamination to other food products in the kitchen. Chicken, if it's not thoroughly cooked, that could also lead to contamination.
We're talking with Tony Corbo, senior lobbyist for the food campaign at Food and Water Watch, and that is an advocacy group supporting stricter food safety regulations. Tony, you mentioned a database that the CDC has that they monitor to see food poisoning patterns in the U.S. Is this something that consumers can access as well? Or if they just want to track infections, is there some place they can find those?
Usually the CDC has food safety alerts that they will issue if they start to detect a pattern. A consumer could submit a Freedom of Information Act request to try to get that data. But the quickest way a consumer will know that there is an issue is if the CDC issues an alert saying that there's an outbreak. And it winds up being kind of an elaborate investigative process that the CDC uses because it relies on questionnaires that consumers fill out. If they get sick and they go to the doctor and the doctor takes a stool sample and all of a sudden the database starts to show that there's a commonality of illnesses associated with, say, salmonella, then local and state health departments will ask consumers to fill out questionnaires to see if they can pinpoint the actual food that has been implicated. And then the regulatory agencies, either the FDA or the USDA, will try to see if it comes from a particular food plant. So it's a fairly elaborate process that's used here.
Do you have any idea, maybe I'm putting you on the spot, but how many people get sick annually from food poisoning in the U.S. and how many actually die from it?
Well, the CDC estimates that approximately 48 million U.S. consumers get sick every year from foodborne illnesses and about 3,000 actually die.
Wow, 48 million. Wow.
Yes.
And that could just be a mild illness, I guess, to get to those numbers. That's a huge part of the population.
Yeah, it could be a mild illness. It could last maybe 24 hours or so. But that's the thing. I mean, what we normally have called in the past the 24-hour stomach bug may be actually a foodborne illness. So if somebody gets over the illness within a short period of time, most of the time, consumers will not go to the doctor, so you don't see those statistics actually showing up in the databases that CDC uses, but they estimate, based on past history, that 48 million people actually get sick every year here in the United States from foodborne illnesses.
Tony, what advice would you have to anyone listening to best avoid getting sick from food poisoning?
Well, one of the things that people need to do within their own kitchens is to make sure that they use clean utensils. Do not use the same utensils to cut meat and cut produce, to make sure that the food is properly stored and it's chilled properly. And then if it winds up being meat or poultry, to actually cook it to the recommended temperatures that the government has issued. For example, hamburger should be cooked to 165 degrees internal temperature, and to use a food thermometer to make sure that the center part of that hamburger is cooked thoroughly. Chicken is 165 degrees internal temperature. So people in their homes need to follow good food safety practices. But in addition to that, we really have to get the regulators to work on salmonella and campylobacter. And since I mentioned that those two pathogens are related to poultry especially, the government does not consider those two pathogens, Campylobacter or Salmonella, as adulterants, meaning that processors can legally put poultry that has Salmonella into commerce. Even though the government has what they call performance standards, they only will post on the government's website those plants, those poultry facilities, for example, that do not meet the government standards. But that company can still put that product into commerce. And we really need to address that. We really need to give the government the authority to declare certain strains of salmonella, those strains, there are thousands of species of salmonella, but there's a certain number of them that do cause foodborne illness, and we really need to give the government the authority to declare those as adulterants and prevent that meat from going into the food supply.
Tony Corbo, senior lobbyist for the Food Campaign at Food and Water Watch. Tony, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
You're listening to InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know.
Workdays can be unpredictable, but your workwear shouldn't be. With a Cintas Apparel Plus program, you'll have freshly laundered garments for everyone on your team delivered every week. Cintas has workwear for just about any job imaginable, with high-performance fabrics and an uncompromising fit that stretches and moves with you. Don't leave looking and feeling good to chance. Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
This is the story of the one. As a quality technician in a food processing center, she knows that making the right call is the best way to avoid a recall. That's why she trusts Grainger's world-class supply chain to deliver the high-quality supplies she needs to help keep her production line, her equipment, and her customers happy and healthy. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Recent research has revealed that a significant number of middle school students have abnormally high heart risk factors, yet most kids aren't tested for those. With the details, once again, InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thanks again, Chris. Dr. Robert Siegel is medical director of the Center for Better Health and Nutrition, part of the Heart Institute at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. So, Dr. Siegel, you led a relatively small study measuring the health of middle schoolers, that is 12 to 14 years of age. And your most recent findings were quite an eye-opener. Tell us what you found.
Yeah, we were very surprised. So our study was looking at cardiovascular screening in middle school kids. And we tested middle school children for height, weight, blood pressure, percent body fat. We also checked their lipid profile, and we did diabetes screening.
And what did your study find?
Well, some of it was expected. We found, like other studies, around a third of them had some minor to some significant cholesterol problem. But what was very surprising to us is two of the 42 kids that we tested in the test for diabetes, they had hemoglobin A1Cs in the diabetic range, which really did come as quite a surprise.
I understand that 42% of those screened were overweight or obese. Is that kind of the norm now for 12 to 14-year-olds?
It's a little on the high side, but actually some estimates nationwide put about 40% of kids are overweight or obese by the time they hit middle school and above. So not very far off of the national norm, a little bit higher.
And obesity obviously must be a related risk factor to your findings about diabetes and even cholesterol.
Absolutely. The diabetes link is very strong. And unfortunately, as kids have struggled more and more with their weight, we are starting to see a lot more type 2 diabetes in that population. Fortunately, it's still relatively uncommon, but it does pop up. The lipid screening, interestingly enough, while being overweight or in that obese range does put you at risk for cholesterol issues, there are many kids that have cholesterol problems simply because of their genetics and are actually in the normal range for their weight. So that's why it's recommended by the American Heart Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics that all kids around age 10 get tested for their cholesterol. The diabetes testing is a little bit more complicated. All kids should be screened in a sense in that they should have their body mass index checked, and they should also be checked for familial risk factors for diabetes. So if a child is in the overweight or obese category, that is, has a body mass index greater than 85th percentile, and they have two historical risk factors for diabetes, then around age 8 to 10 should also have a diabetes test.
So based upon all your research, if you could offer parents of teenagers, or perhaps teenagers themselves, one piece of advice, what would it be?
Well, we recommend the 5-2-1-0 scheme. 5 fruit or vegetable servings every day, 2 hours or less of screen time, 1 hour or more of physical activity and zero sugary drinks. And that's a great start on a healthy lifestyle.
And we should note that the obesity epidemic among teens is not unique. It's basically dovetailing what is happening with adults.
Yeah, sadly, a lot of the population is being affected, and it's not just the U.S. It's a really worldwide epidemic at this point.
So do you have a takeaway message from all this?
I think the important point of the study is really this type of testing, which is recommended, really needs to be done. And what we offer with our study is just another potential place where it can be done. So for parents, if their doctors, nurse practitioners, or whoever their primary care provider isn't doing the test, then this might be a viable alternative.
What are the main reasons that the tests are not being done?
Some of it has to do with payment, believe it or not. Some of it has to do with convenience. So not all offices are set up to do it, so kids have to be referred to more standard laboratories, either freestanding or hospital-based laboratories, so parents have to get the kids over to get them tested. So there's just a whole host of barriers, but what we're seeing nationwide is around 25 to 30% of kids at most are getting tested for this right now.
Dr. Robert Siegel, director of the Center for Better Health and Nutrition, part of the Heart Institute at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That's it for another edition of InfoTrack, a weekly production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. InfoTrack Internet services are provided by Pear.com. Thanks to this week's contributor, Roy Mackey. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Baby, yeah, the dolphins make me cry, but there's nothing I can do. I 80s, 90s, and more. 105.7. CFW.
Shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer.
I'm next to you. When I go out, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. If I get drunk, well, I know I'm gonna be the man who gets drunk next to you. And if I haver, yeah, I know I'm gonna be the man who's havering to you. But I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 miles. gonna be the man who's lonely without you. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm gonna dream. I'm gonna dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out,
when I go out,
well, I know I'm gonna be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home,
when I come home,
yes, I know I'm gonna be the man who comes back home with you. I'm gonna be the man who's coming home.
And more. 105.7
CFW.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
Singing along. It sounds pretty good, though.
Well, I like to sing along to music, so it keeps me in a better mood.
Here's another one for you to sing to. 105.7 CFW.
Give it some more time.
make someone's day extra special. Open up the Civic Media app. Find CFW, then send us your birthday and anniversary shout-outs. Mike will pass them along weekday mornings at 8:15. Sponsored by Lasker Jewelers. Mike McKay in the morning. 105.7 CFW.
Looking to rent out farmland? Why not rent your land to Peck Farms for a year? You'll see why landowners enjoy partnering with Peck Farms year after year to improve soil health, fertility, and sustainability. To learn more, call or text Mark Peck, 715-894-7772, or email markpeck302@gmail.com. Partner with Peck Farms, because great farming starts with great partnerships.
Opioid manufacturer Purdue Pharma's Political Action Committee donated to just one Wisconsin candidate in 2016. That candidate was extreme politician Judge Brad Schimmel. The company also gave money to a national Republican group whose PAC spent nearly $3 million on Schimmel's 2018 election. From the year 2000 to 2017, Wisconsin had over 7,500 opioid-related deaths. Democratic and Republican attorneys general from other states and 71 out of 72 counties filed lawsuits against Purdue Pharma. But Brad Schimmel refused to join them. Thousands of Wisconsinites died. Wisconsin people should always take priority over profits. Tell Judge Brad Schimmel to look out for Wisconsinites, not out-of-state drug companies. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
Celebrate the women who have helped shape the world as we honor Women's History Month with powerful stories of Wisconsin's own. We remember the legacy of Val Phillips, the trailblazing civil rights leader, is also the first African-American woman elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly. Phillips was born in Milwaukee, and though she faced both racial and gender barriers, she remained strong in her fight for equality. She helped pass groundbreaking laws to desegregate public housing while also fighting for voting rights. Her courage and determination wasn't just for Wisconsin, but for the nation. And Phillips' legacy continues to inspire those who believe in justice, showing that one voice can spark change. These are the stories continuing to inspire all of us every day. And as we honor them, we will also recognize the powerful women who are still writing history. I'm Terry Barr.
Chippewa Valley Weather. I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Sunshine, a few high clouds around for your Sunday, and southwest winds could be a little bit breezy in spots. Highs in the lower to middle 50s. Tonight, mostly clear in the lower 30s. On Monday, sunshine and warmer, highs reaching the middle 60s. It's 30 at our studios.
CFW.
This one goes out to the one I've left behind. A simple prop to occupy my time. This one goes out to the one I love. Fire! This one goes out to the one I've left behind. A simple prop to occupy my time. This one goes out to the one I love. Fire! Fire!
one goes out to the one I've left behind. Another prop has occupied my time. This one goes out to the one I love. Fire!
'90s and more.
105.7 CFW.
Your home for the 80s, 90s, and more. WCFW-FM and WCFW-HD1 Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire.
Streaming live on the free Civic Media app.
CFW.
Nothing but a slow glowing dream that your fear seems to hide deep inside your mind.